are listening to the Geocaching Podcast, a podcast about everything geocaching, where you'll hear tips and tricks, interviews with cachers, and lots more. Welcome to episode 91 of the Geocaching Podcast. I am your host, XPunkX, with
Daryl W. Four and
Montu Ryder.
If you want to participate on our show today, please call 724-444-7444. And our talkcast is 7525. Hopefully we'll be able to get you on. We've been having some trouble here with the TalkShoe, the service that we're using. But you can also join our live chat room to participate with our other listeners. And that can be found at www.geocachingpodcast.info. Click the Join Now to Participate button on the right. And if you're calling during the week and want to put in some other other feedback, we have a voicemail line, and that number can be found at 206-350-3GPS. And again, we are on Twitter like everybody else is, twitter.com/GCPodcast. Sorry, you'd think I'd get that one by now, but welcome back, guys. Montu, Daryl, Montu, how you been since last week?
Oh, pretty good. Got some cashing in. Actually found a few, including one FTF we got lucky on. Saturday night, we did with Pathfinders a Pinewood Derby race and fundraiser. They had me cooking the burgers again. Actually raised $400 to help us with that trip to Oshkosh. So it's looking like we're going to be able to help everyone to go, even the kids that whose families aren't as fortunate as some of the others. Daryl, how about you?
Well, I've finally been able to get out and get caught up from being sick so much this winter. It's kind of been rough around here, not just myself, but a lot of people at work have been out. We're really looking forward to spring. But I did have a chance to play with the updates on a couple of iPhone apps and was very happy with all of those updates. So we'll talk about that a little bit more when we get down to the news and maybe even in the topics. Andy, what have you been up to?
Well, it sounds like, Montu, that they love you for cooking burgers. It sounds like you cook a mean burger if they keep every time putting you up to cooking the burgers. Sounds like you
no
make a good
kidding.
Burger.
I flipped a bunch last Saturday night.
And I'd ask you to send me one, but I don't think it tastes too good by the time I got to Indiana here.
Well, maybe you can come over to the camper and I'll fix you some there.
All right, sounds good. Hey, for me, I've been kind of like Daryl. I got sick a couple last week. I was feeling kind of sick, or 2 weeks ago I was feeling kind of sick, and then I got a little bit sick this weekend too. It just kind of hit me again. My stomach was all cramped, and just not really a good weekend. It was more of a weekend to just kind of sit back and relax and take it easy. It really was. So we really didn't get a chance to do a whole lot of stuff. But you know, it was nice to have a little bit of a rest, and I'm feeling better now. So that's a good thing. So yeah. It's another week, another podcast. We got some news items to cover tonight, and we're doing a cacher coffee, what we like to call cacher coffee, which is basically an open forum, kind of like if you're out in a coffee shop with your local geocaching buddies, you can just kind of talk about whatever you kind of feel like talking about. So that's going to be our show tonight. Montu, why don't you kick us off with the latest news items?
Well, I'll be more than happy to. Lowrance announces 3 new GPS receivers. The first one is the versatile Safari Outdoor GPS handheld. Lowrance announced it is full-featured touchscreen handheld GPS, the Safari, offering enhanced situational awareness to outdoor enthusiasts. The Safari combines advanced mapping capabilities with a trip computer, electronic compass, barometric altimeter, all into a powerful handheld GPS system. Touchscreen display and simple intuitive keypad make it easy to enter data and access information. The Safari is preloaded with a sophisticated base map and supports both plug-and-play microSD cards and downloadable maps, offering complete versatility to aid any outdoor adventurer. The Safari GPS handheld has a compact, sleek housing that incorporates rubberized armoring that protects the unit and provides a comfortable grip. Its user interface is optimized for ease of use, featuring both touchscreen and keypad functionality. The device measures 5.1 inches high by 2.3 inches wide and 1.1 inches deep. and weighs a scant 5.8 ounces without the two AA batteries. The GPS handheld includes a high-resolution 2.7-inch color touchscreen display, marine-grade speaker headphone jack, microphone, mini USB power port, USB to mini USB cable, and a reinforced attachment loop. Micro SD card slot allows up to 32 gigabyte of user specific storage for mapping, picture, video, and MP3 audio files. The Lowrance Safari GPS has the manufacturer's suggested retail price of $384.99 US and will be available for purchase tentatively in May of 2009. Andy?
Now, the other one that that they announced was one called their Sierra Outdoor GPS Handheld. And they announced the introduction of Sierra, its next generation handheld GPS, which features a full touch screen operation, a high accuracy 3D digital compass and barometric altimeter. The Sierra provides a sensor-enhanced navigation and better situational awareness capabilities than other products on the market. It comes preloaded with a high-detail outdoor maps and fully functional right out of the box. The Sierra is the flagship of Lowrance's new Endura line of GPS devices. It's designed for versatility, and it provides never-before-seen expansion capabilities. The device contains 4 gig of memory and provides a SD slot for expansion, to an additional 32 gig of storage for mapping, pictures, and MP3 files again. The preloaded content includes the Intermaps Acuterra TM, high-resolution topographic maps, extensive outdoor trail networks, and points of interest, as well as a NavTech road network for all contiguous 48 states with an upgrade option of fully featured turn-by-turn navigation. In addition, they offer a full range of additional mapping content, including fishing hotspots, and other national and international mapping content, and they have a fully customizable. The Sierra accepts many public domain files and community-based content, such as GPX trails and outdoor POIs. The user interface is optimized for ease of use, featuring both touchscreen and a keypad, and it's fully waterproof. And it is compact and comfortable grip with a steel blue housing. And rubberized again, and the device measures about 5.1 inches by 2.3 inches wide and 1.1 inches deep, and weighs about 5.8 ounces with the two AA batteries. And it's a high-resolution 2.7-inch color screen display and a mini USB port for power and data cables. It's going to be available in the U.S. here shortly and has a suggested retail price of $549. Monty, do you want to touch on the last Lowrance?
I'll be happy to. The last one is the new Outback GPS handheld. The Outback handheld GPS provides outdoor enthusiasts with a savvy, comprehensive navigational tool at an affordable price, says Jens Thomas Petrella, president and CEO of Navico. With its tremendous expansion capabilities, and access to community content, the Outback is fully customizable to provide enthusiasts the exact support they need, whatever and wherever their outdoor adventures take them. The Outback GPS handheld compact yellow housing with, again, rubberized armoring provides a comfortable grip. Its user interface is optimized for ease of use and, again, features both touchscreen and keypad functionality. The device is 5.1 inches high, 2.3 inches wide, and 1.1 inches deep, and again is 5.8 ounces without the batteries. It takes two AA's. The handheld device includes a high resolution 2.7-inch color touchscreen display with micro SD slot with up to an additional 32 gigabytes of storage for mapping cards, mini USB port for power and data cables, USB to mini USB cable included, cigarette lighter adapter, and a reinforced attachment loop. The Outback has a suggested retail price of $229.99.
Now, Daryl, do you want to touch a little bit on the new apps that have come out for the iPod and the iPod Touch and the iPhone?
Sure. These are actually updates to existing versions, and we'll start with the geocaching app, which was updated to version 1.2, and it includes translations to Dutch, French, and German. And here's the big thing. You can now log caches on your iPhone using the field notes, and anyone who heard the podcaster quick review that I did on it might recall that I said that this is probably the best field note implementation I've seen to date, so I'm really happy with that. It also increased the number of logs for each cache from 5 to 10, updated the navigation screen to include a new compass, as well as current and destination coordinates, and external links to view the original cache listing and trackable items on geocaching.com. And I do have a blog post about my initial impressions, and we'll put that link in the show notes as well. But the other one that was updated was iGeocacher, and this is probably a better solution for people looking at replacing their CacheMate, you know, especially if you have a device that isn't always connected like the iPod Touch. And it now has support for group maps with Zoom to show all of the caches in an area. Very nice feature that I wish the GroundSpeak geocaching app would add in. Some other stuff that I'm not going to touch on, but they did make a bunch of performance improvements, and the application is doing much better than it did with the last build. So that's version 1.14, and if you'd like to check that out, both of those apps are available on the iTunes Store, and we'll have links in the show notes as well. Andy, do you want to talk about the new GSAC?
Sure. GSAC, which is the Geocaching Swiss Army Knife, came out with a new version. That's 7.5.0, and it has a bunch of new features in it. The first feature we're going to talk about is they added the Garmin POI export support, so you can now export to your POI, which I know Geek Boy will love because he does a lot of that. And the next thing is the ability to filter and set flags of children waypoints via the Children tab on the filter dialog. They've also added the ability for split screen to set to the top, bottom, or left or right. They've added dual monitor support for the split screen. And TerraCaching mental and physical values now converted to difficulty and train, respectively. They've also fixed the problem of disappearing icons on the toolbar when restoring settings from the one computer to another with different DPI settings. They've also fixed the problem of GSAC freezing at the splash screen when it's first run on some of the systems. Now, Daryl, I want to ask you to talk about the next one since you use Mac caching some. Can you talk about that?
Sure. Yeah, it's been a while since we've seen an update to Mac caching, but finally build 184 is available. This is a beta version and includes some new features, including fixes for the Garmin HC devices. That's part of the GPS Babel, which is now included, the 1.3.6 release. It now exports to CacheMate to include more information. And he's also added multiple database support, and you can get that from Tools Select Database from the menus. Now, this is a beta release, but it is available to download from maccaching.com. And again, we'll have the link in the show notes.
All right. Now, what we're going to do now is we come to the part of our show. We've moved past the news section. So we're actually going to go ahead and open up the phone lines here in a second. And it's going to be like a caching coffee geo meeting up where we just talk about whatever random whoever wants to speak can speak. It's going to be an open forum for a while. And I apologize for the choppy audio we had a little bit earlier in the show. We've had some issues with TalkShoe tonight where everything seems to be getting a little bit choppy. So also, if you're unmuted and I notice that your line is coming back with a lot of feedback, I'll probably go ahead and mute you. So if you have some input, go ahead and press the request to talk or the *8 on your keyboard. If you're not on the phone line and you'd like to put something in, you can either type that into the chat room, or you can go ahead and give us a call, and that number is 724-444-7444. And our TalkCast ID is 7525. Montu, would you like to talk about the first topic that we have tonight that you put in our thing?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. This actually came across because I own a pair of HP laptops. On their website, they are now offering a AA USB rechargeable batteries. It sells for a pair for just $14.99. Now, one of the things I like about these is a lot of times when we're out and about, yes, we usually have the transformers in our cars so that we can power our laptops up, but usually that's taking up all the available outlets. We don't have any way of charging up the batteries when we need to. These batteries, you actually pop the top of it off, and underneath the top cap is a USB port, and you just plug it into your laptop or any available USB hub that you've got, and it'll charge it up. There's even an indicator light to let you know when it's at 90 and even at 100% charge. So it will make for a really easy way of making sure you keep the batteries charged up on those batteries that we need for our GPSs.
I took a look at them, and I don't know what you guys think. It seems interesting. I don't know if I would want to do that with – it seems like they'd take up more USB spots than I have. You could only do one or two at a time. Anybody take a look at this? The link that Geekboy has provided in the show notes, what you think. Daryl, I know that you're pretty much the podcast resident expert on all things rechargeable batteries. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I did take a look at these earlier. I think it was Daily Gizwiz had talked about them. And one of the problems I had was generally the lack of longevity in these batteries, because they had to chop down the overall capacity of the battery in order to get that USB connector. That being said, it is a very, very cool, especially like for a backup set of batteries, to take with you on a trip or something, because it's one less charger that you'd have to bring with you on the plane or, you know, in your bags or whatever.
Yeah, that was the part that I like so much about them, is the fact that I don't need a charger. You know, if I'm on a trip, I'm most likely going to have the laptop with me, so I don't need a charger. I just slap them in. Luckily, with my laptop, I've got four USB ports on it. Two are right next to each other, and then the other two are far enough apart. I'd have no problems plugging in at least three, maybe even all four of those batteries without a problem, and that's without doing a hub.
Yeah, and we're now seeing more of the travel accessories like the power bars, the inverters for your car that have those USB jacks built in. So, you know, you could, in theory, plug them in on the power strip at the hotel while you're caching or whatever, and they're ready when you come back.
Yeah, or you could have one of those batteries like the ones that I sent you the other day on Twitter, Gerald, the ones that you use urine to recharge.
Yeah, those sound a little scary, but you know, we'll have to see what they're actually like when they hit the market.
I can't imagine using those.
Unnamed Mike is asking about the charge time, and from what I understand, that does vary based on the USB port it's connected to.
Yeah, it didn't list that on the HP website when I took a look at it. It just gave the price $14.99 for the pair of them.
Ouch, that's spendy.
Yeah, it's not cheap at all, but you know, for that convenience, you're going to end up paying for it. Basically, you're paying the price for a set of four of the low discharge NIMs for two that have a built-in USB charger.
Which, like you said earlier, is nice if you come across, you know, where you're out and you need to charge something, you don't have the regular charger, you can just plug it into your computer or whatnot. And I mean, it is, I think it'd be nice to have as a backup, like you said, but would I want to use them? Meh, all the time? Not really, because they're not cheap, and you'd have to have a lot of USB ports to charge a lot of them at once. So for me, I would pass on that.
Actually, I picked up a, I believe it was an Eveready, an Energizer charger. It charges two AA or AAA batteries, and it runs off the USB port as well. So that works quite nicely for doing at least two batteries at a time.
Well, I believe each of them had a dual battery charger from USB, but one of those was kind of cool in that it actually talked with the computer, and you actually have a little control panel that gives you feedback and shows you the level of charge and that kind of stuff. I want to say that one was like $30 or $40 with low discharge DIMM batteries. So, you know, that's probably a little bit better option, actually, than these cool little, you know, USB built-in cells.
And they certainly will last longer. The charger I picked up does that. The charger I picked up will actually talk back with Windows and give you a charge status and approximate remaining time to charge.
Where did you pick that up at?
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Believe it or not, I picked it up at Home Depot, and it was like around $15 for the charger with a pair of batteries in it.
Wow, that's not too bad. Cow.
Yeah, that's getting real cheap. And as I recall, it actually has a AC adapter with it as well. Am I correct?
Yes, it did.
Yeah, so you can go either way.
Right.
That's very handy. I'm kind of curious what people are using for paperless caching these days.
I'm using a regular iPod.
And you're just using that through the notes, or how are you doing it paperless?
Yeah, it's through the notes. I dump it from GSAC over to it.
I'm still holding out for the Bishop's Power Notes for the iPod. I'm using his field notes for my laptop when we do power caching runs, but I'd love to be able to do it on my iPod Touch. And Daryl, when I saw that it was posted that the update to the geocaching app was released and it had field notes, I know one of the first things I said to you is, "Hey, I know you're gonna get this. Does it have the ability to do what I want?" And you did confirm my thoughts on it, and you can do the field notes offline, so you could use them with your iPod Touch. However, I didn't like the fact that I couldn't feed it a GPX file. I had to.
Yeah, there's no kind of bulk load functionality.
No, like you said, you had to go and click save on each cache that you wanted to do. And for me, it's okay if I'm doing one or two caches, but I like to have my whole area loaded, and if I want to run out, I just grab the GPS and I have them all there. I don't think I'd want to have to log on and see which ones I want. Do it like that. To me, that's more of a pain. So for me, I kind of would like that. I think I'd like the functionality of the iGeocacher, especially. But if they would add the field notes thing, like, it just would be awesome.
Yeah, agreed. That's such a mandatory thing these days. That, you know, you've got to have the field notes to be a current paperless app.
Well, but the thing is it's really not officially. It's really not officially supported as far as the direct upload goes. I mean, the geocaching app does it fine, but anything else is going to have to create a file for you to manually upload unless they hack it like Bishop did. And, you know, so officially it's, unless someone's going to put that time into it, I don't think that's going to happen.
Well, I believe that you can actually somehow license that from Groundspeak, because that's the same thing that the Geocache Navigator is doing. Is doing the direct upload where you just, you know, click on and you go through your notes. But all the rest of these so far have been kind of reverse engineered from the Colorado and Oregon specs.
Do y'all think that iPod touches and iPhones will eventually be like, you know, almost standard with carrying your GPS out to geocache?
I wouldn't say replace the GPS. But, I mean, in some cases, yeah. I mean, if you're going to do a first to find it, replace it. Or for those of you who have the phone already and don't have a GPS and are just hearing about geocaching, it's a good entry barrier to entry because you already have it. But as far as essential, I would say, I mean, if I had it where I could do paperless caching with it and it would be good and do the field notes and everything, I would always have it with me when I went caching. It's small, it's light, yeah, and you can fit it in your pocket.
You have to believe that they're going to find a way to make the GPS, you know, even better, you know, with later on releases down the road.
Yeah, we're not going to see that in the current version of the iPhone. It's kind of a trade-off between how much power it uses versus how accurate it is. You know, you're not going to get a little GPS in the phone like that. That's not going to suck down a ton of power. That's very accurate. You know, GPS takes quite a bit of power to give you good accuracy. Now, you know, that's going to improve as our battery technologies advance and the chips that they use for GPSs advance as well. But you know, I'm not sure that we're going to see the iPhone or the iPod Touch in particular become the standard. It's, I think, going to be more and more cell phone caching, and we're going to start to see the dedicated handhelds like the Oregon, the Colorado, you know, the Triton series, the PN40. I think those are going to start to diminish in numbers for the actual percentage of cache finds.
Now you did mention the PN40. I know that everyone here pretty much knows that I have a demo unit of the PN40, and Daryl has bought a unit. We do plan on doing a review of it. We're kind of waiting until the new firmware comes out on it for the actual geocaching functionality. Right now, I'd have to say that the geocaching functionality on it is fairly limited as far as the paper, like not paperless, but even the way what you can do with the waypoints. I mean, it has so much potential, but it's not there yet. And so I know that soon they're going to be releasing a upgrade. They're supposed to be doing that before Christmas or right at Christmas, but they didn't do that. Now, I've been in contact with them, and they said that they don't have an official date for it yet. So I'm trying to get my demo unit a little bit longer so we can hold out for that.
Yeah, at this point, my impression of the PN40 is it's very much like the early Magellans that I used, just with a lot better GPS performance. But as far as the interface and, you know, for caching especially, it really does feel like I'm on one of those old units.
Now, Daryl, I guess speaking on that topic a little bit, how did you like the software that they use for loading the maps and things?
You know, quite honestly, it didn't bother me. It was a lot slower than I would have liked, but it didn't pain me too much, aside from the fact that I had a hard time figuring out what the limits were of the card that I had installed in the unit itself.
Now, for me, I didn't like having to select for the aerial photos of the little tiny grids. You know, I like on my Garmin where I can select, well, I have the NT map, so I can select the whole state of, you know, Indiana right at once. I mean, for the topo maps, you have to select, you know, smaller sections, but it seemed a little bit cumbersome to me to do that, especially just for, I mean, an aerial photo. I mean, I guess if you're going to know what cache you're going to hit, you could load that and it'd be good. But for me, that was a little bit cumbersome, I would have to say. Anyone else have any experience with the Magellan PN40 or the Magellan software in general?
Well, that would be the DeLorme.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I haven't even tried actually loading any of the aerial photos yet. I got so turned off to the caching when we tried going out with it twice, and no luck either time. It might not have been the unit so much because the weather was bad and we had a lot of ice and snow, but still, you know, it just wasn't a very pleasant experience using it for caching. So it kind of went back in the box, and it's waiting for the software update before I pull it out again.
And that's one thing, I guess, one of my complaints right now, and there may be a way to do this. I don't know if anyone knows, let me know. But with the Garmin, I can plug the Garmin in and load the software and say, hey, check if there's any updates, and it checks. And I haven't found a way to do that with the PN40 yet. I have to rely on Twitter and stuff like that to figure out if there is any. That's another one of my complaints too.
I don't think it had a, has such a interface with the way the Garmin does. You know, I think Magellan's and Lawrence's would have, would be more active in the geocaching market.
Yeah, at this point, Garmin has become so entrenched, it's going to be kind of hard to unseat them, largely because they're doing all of this extra support. You know, they have support for the Mac, which none of the other GPS makers currently have, though DeLorme is promising they'll have the geocaching app available for the Mac when that does ship. There's that communicator plugin that Garmin has provided for anyone to use on their websites. That's what does it send a GPS functionality from GroundSpeak. And that has been very, very popular with a lot of the users, and it's great. You know, we use it all the time for FDFs. At one point, GroundSpeak had actually talked about some kind of ability to store pocket queries on their server, and they were going to try to create a way for that plugin to actually send the entire pocket query to your GPS. So there could be a time when the only thing you need to use is that Garmin Communicator plugin, your web browser, and their servers, you know, the GroundSpeak servers, and you don't need any software on your machine at all.
Now that comes for some good things, but I know, like myself, I like to treat the data a little bit and help put it a little bit different so that the waypoint, the name looks a little bit different and the comment and stuff, so I know what's going on, and that doesn't happen when you get the file directly from GroundSpeak. So, I mean, that would be good for some things, but for me, I don't know if I'd be quick to adopt that for a full reason.
Well, I'm hoping that if they do come up with that kind of functionality, that they could tie that in with like the geocache navigator and with their geocache app itself, so that, you know, okay, I want to load all of these waypoints into my phone or into my iPod Touch or whatever, so that you'd have a quick, easy way from within the application to pick one of your pocket queries and say, you know, load this into my device.
Now, Alpha Whiskey in the chat room is asking, how accurate is the iPhone for the GPS fix?
Well, it's actually rated at about 56 feet is the best fix I've been able to get on it. But I would probably say it's a little bit better than that. It reminds me very much of using my old Etrex Legend when I was under some light tree cover. It can be a little bit slow to respond. It's, it doesn't bounce around a whole lot, but it doesn't really respond as quickly as it should. It's a little bit slow, and it's definitely not anywhere near as accurate as like a 60 CSX or Garmin Colorado or Oregon.
Anyone else have any topics that they'd like to bring up tonight? Anything you want to ask, any questions? Like I said, it's an open forum tonight. If you want to call in 724-444-7444, and our TalkCast ID is 7525. Or you can go ahead and just type it in the chat room if you have a question in the chat room and you're not on the phone. Now, I noticed one of the downsides of caching this past week. I tried to go out and do a cache during my lunch period, and it was very, very obvious where the cache was going to be at. It was downtown South Bend, and there was a metal structure, and even the hint said it's, you know, a magnetic, and it's got to be on the structure. The problem was this structure was in this, like, a little tiny park in front of a building, but the park didn't have anything plowed on it. So there I am in my business clothes, walking through snow that's, you know, up to my ankles and trying to find the cache, and I didn't even find it. And then so I had to go back to work with my pants a little bit wet and didn't even find the cache. And it was kind of frustrating for me anyways with winter caching. Anyone have any, like, I don't know, tips and tricks for winter caching? Because we still are in the snow times. We still have snow for a little while here, and hopefully it's warming up. But anyone have any tips or tricks to that we can talk about?
Yeah, come to Florida. Snow. What snow?
Hey, thanks.
Come to Texas where we can't drive when it's under 40 degrees.
Well, I can relate with you, Andy. I went out trying to find a cache with the iPhone. First two caches I attempted, I couldn't get. One of them was because it was in the corner of like the fence in one of these parks, and we had way too much snow to try to even catch that one.
Yeah, and it's kind of disappointing. I mean, you get there, and it's like with this one, I'm like, I drove here on my lunch period, and I really want to find it, and I know it's there. I know it's there. I know where to. I should be able to find it. And I looked, and I was out there. I couldn't find it. And part of it was the fact that I looked really, really suspicious because there's a main road that goes right by it, and so I was trying to find it, and I was looking like I was looking suspicious, and so I didn't. With all the snow, I mean, who's gonna be in the middle of this park in business clothes, in the snow, ankle deep, and then looking on this metal thing? So I didn't want to spend too much time. Yeah, I didn't end up finding the cache. So
yeah, I really haven't come up with a good way to cache when we get this much snow. You know, we've got probably anywhere from 3 to 6 inches on the ground right now, As of this weekend, it was a nice, crunchy, icy snow, so there's no way to even, like, brush it around when you're done. Any of your footprints are noticeable. So you just got to kind of stomp around and make it less obvious where you were and what you were looking for. But yeah, there's just really not a whole lot you can do, especially because a lot of the caches are now buried under that snow.
Well, unnamed in our chat room says insulated hip waders, and that would be a good thing. But then I pretty much look like I was lost for while I was fishing or something, and I don't know if that'd work. It'd keep me warm, but I'd still look pretty suspicious.
But why are you fishing in the parking lot there?
Yeah, that's true. That makes it even look worse. And the thing that stinks about it too is, you know, we had been having this negative temperature, and I know for those of you who are up in Canada, sometimes, you know, hey, that's life, negative temperatures. But for us down here, it's kind of brutal. And so when we get up a little bit warm, where we're, you know, into the 15 and 20, 20 degrees, it makes me want to go out caching, because it's not that brutal wind and cold. When you step out, you freeze. So I really wanted to hit that cache that day.
Okay, Andy, here's your tip.
What's
the sub-zero weather makes the island caches a little less terrain 5, because most of them are walkable.
That's true, but the one that I really want to hit is one that you have to cross over a river, and the river here doesn't freeze that deep, though. So I don't want to fall in. That'd be even worse. But, you know, it does definitely make those caches that used to be terrain 5s now and not a terrain 5. I know that, Daryl, before we end up tonight, we had talked a little bit this week about Geo Woodstock. Anyone planning to go to that?
Well, I certainly would like to hit Geo Woodstock, but there's a number of other mega events, I guess, right about the same time, including GC in Ohio and the Geo Coin Fest in Salt Lake City. Actually got their webpage up today.
Yeah, I did see that. You
know, there's going to be a few of those out there this year.
It would be nice if we get there to do a live show, though.
Oh, that'd be a lot of fun.
That would be a lot of fun.
I'm looking forward to it. One way or another, I'm hoping to get there. Unless something changes, we still plan on being there. It's just a question of what we're going to do when we are there.
Exactly. And if I end up showing up, we can do a... I don't know if I'll have the money to show up or not, but if I do show up, we'll do a live show from there. If not, we'll try to get something going live. At least an update from you. Something while you're alive. So with that, anyone else going to go to Duo Woodstock or any of the other mega events where any of our other listeners can try and find everybody?
Here in Texas, I'm not going to be able to go to Duo Woodstock because it's right there towards the end of the school year. But the start of our spring break, I'm a school teacher, and we're having the Texas Challenge this year in Fredericksburg, Texas. And we probably don't get the 500, but we probably get about 300 to 350 when it's all said and done. So that ought to be pretty interesting this year. I'm going to go to my first one.
Well, that should be a lot of fun.
Mega events are a lot of fun, too. I mean, I love going to mega, at least the one mega event I did. It's fun to be able to see everybody and meet new people. All right, well, if we don't have any other topics tonight, we'll go ahead and wrap up this Cacher Coffee. Join us each Tuesday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time on the TalkShoe service. You can call in live 724-444-7444, and our TalkCast ID is 7525, or you can sign on to TalkShoe.com. Our show notes and all of our links to past shows can be found at www.geocachingpodcast.info. If you want to leave us a voicemail, shoot us a shout-out at 206-3503-GPS anytime and leave us a voicemail. Have a great week, stay safe, and keep on caching.